food for discussion.
Okay, thank you, Representative Drew. Representative Van Leeuwen, did you have a question?
Well, I've got several concerns over the bill in general. I just want some real examples of what this really does refer to as I see it, especially on the licensing, which you're hoping to transfer over to House Bill 2237. As I read it, does that mean if someone in my district is hauling fuel from home to forest or home to field, that they've got to each get that license you're talking about here? Is that what it's saying?
No. The license that's referred to here is if you're managing a waste, you know, material intended to be discarded or a residue of a manufacturing process. Fuel is a commodity, and the only regulation would be PUC or DOT, federal DOT, requirements on commodities being shipped on public highways. So our proposals here would not relate to commodities. Now, commodities may have exactly the same characteristics. You know, gasoline intended to be used and gasoline intended to be discarded would both meet this criteria of 140 degrees Fahrenheit or less. But where it's intended to be used, it's not regulated by DEQ. Where it's intended to be disposed of or discarded, then it's regulated. So if the hauler in your district was hauling a waste, something intended for disposal, then we would regulate that transportation. But we do not regulate the commodity.
That would be under the PUC.
Only under PUC, and they primarily are interested in safety considerations, you know, the mechanical soundness of the vehicle being used and driver training and hours of service.
Rich, you still don't have those. They wouldn't require a license anyhow, would they? You would just have licenses for disposal, storage, and treatment.
That's correct. There is a registration requirement for transporters. Merely stating to PUC, or in the case of Aaron Water, they would be stating to us that it's their intent to perform this activity, and they would be issued an identification number that they would use on any documents accompanying the shipments. But there is no licensing requirements.
Any other questions?
Madam Chairperson?
Representative Priestley.
Could I just ask some questions? And let me say, I don't want you to be at all offended, but because I don't know about these things, new people do, and I appreciate the good work you do for the public, but I like to ask a lot of questions. I like to ask them real short questions, and I like real short answers. If they're long answers, if you can give me the short version, because I want to ask the next question that goes on to give you the expanded part, see? That's just for the rest of 6 months. I won't mention that again to you folks, okay? I'm new to this thing, but I remind myself in the interim that definitions are really kind of key to things. So I want to kind of be careful of the definitions on this committee when they come before us. In the first page, line 11, this is just a grammatic change. Where it's such and the and that stuff.
Right. And then we did not propose that.
Down here in 16 where it says hazardous waste and change that to waste, is that all grammatical?
Yes.
18
yes.
Also yes. Pursuant to and under and all that, and 26 such deleted, that's just okay. And such again on the first line of page 2. Could I ask you, maybe it'd be quicker, are there any non-grammatical changes in definitions?
Yes.
On
number 7.
Line 9.
Okay.
Number definition 8 and definition 9.
And what do those do about these in pursuance, in accordance with the license issued pursuant, and so forth? Okay. You said that already, but I didn't understand it.
Okay. There is a requirement in another part of the statute that says in order to establish a collection, treatment, or disposal site, you must receive a license.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we have a definition that says in order to be a hazardous waste collection site, you already have a license. You know, it is not a site unless it has a license. So it's impossible to violate the requirement of, you know, you cannot establish a site without a license, because by definition, a site has a license.
So this doesn't weaken the law?
it makes it stronger. Because now, in fact, you can't establish it without applying for the license first, you know, once these changes are made. Without these changes, someone could go out and establish the site, and we would not be able to take enforcement action because they haven't violated anything. Because by definition, a site has a license.
Representative Troup.
On that Northeast Portland site, for example, they didn't have the ability to step in, or at least that's the question, so EPA had to take the lead. Mm-hmm. And if there hadn't been this catch-22 in the law, then ODEQ could have had involvement other than essentially just communicating with EPA.
Okay.
Now, these three changes were brought to our attention by our attorneys, and they made a request that if we submitted a bill for any other reason, that we should definitely correct this circuitous, definitional problem.
Have you talked to industry?
Representative Priestley.
Thanks, Mr. Representative. Madam Chairperson, have you talked to industry about these changes?
Not directly, but industry is represented by, Tom Donica, and ask him. He's aware of this bill being submitted.
The question I'm interested in, have you folks changed what you're asking us in response to what Donica talked with you about?
He did not ask for any changes from what we proposed.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other? Stan.
Madam Chair, before we move on, one of the basis for the emphasis in the bill upon the air and water transporters, as opposed to a motor vehicle transporter, is the historic desire by the state to achieve full administrative responsibility for the hazardous waste management program in the state of Oregon. Currently, many of those responsibilities are held by EPA, but EPA, as well as other federal agencies, have sought in recent times to transfer much of that administrative authority to state governments whenever possible. We have determined that it is in our best interest to seek and achieve that type of control over the program in the state. But in order, before we can be certified by EPA to have that type of administrative responsibility, we must prove to them that our program, or our proposed program, is essentially equivalent to that which EPA would run if they had responsibility. One of the deficiencies that EPA has noted is our enforcement authority in the category of air and water transport. And so this, as was the bill in 1981, is intended to shore up our authority, our role in that area, and hopefully in that manner satisfy the concerns of EPA, and as a result receive from EPA full administrative responsibility for the hazardous waste program in the state. We have, however, just this week received information from EPA after they'd had an opportunity to review the bill. They indicated that they might want to seek some further amendments to the bill to satisfy their interests. We have met with the PUC office because some of the suggested revisions by EPA might impact statutes that the PUC administers. Our attorneys have been involved in this, and we've been working with EPA, but it's possible that in the next week or so we might have some additional language, some amendments that we would want to make to 2238 in order to satisfy both EPA's needs as well as the Public Utility Commissioner's needs.
Stan, if you don't do this, will EPA do it for you? I mean, will they come in?
I'll turn to Rich and let Rich respond.
Okay. Right at this time, there's actually a duplicate program in Oregon. There's a state program through Chapter 459, and there is a federal program through the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act of 1976. As Stan alluded to, it is possible for states to have their programs recognized and authorized by EPA. But there's three criteria that EPA applies. One is that the program has to be equivalent to the federal program. It cannot be any less restrictive than the federal program. It can be more restrictive, however. Two, the program must be consistent with the states around. And three, the program must be enforceable. And so they have been looking at Chapter 459. They've looked at this particular bill, and they have provided us with a series of questions saying, here are some areas, additional areas which we don't think you've addressed, that we would like you to consider as to whether or not you have adequate statutory authority. And we just recently got that within the last 2 weeks, and we have not had a chance to meet with our attorneys to see whether we agree or disagree with EPA. But right now there are two programs that companies are responsible for complying with, and it would be our desire to have our program authorized in lieu of the federal program so that companies would only have to be responsible to DEQ.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Priestley and then Representative Trey.
Well, I'm sorry. I hope I'm not being... Thanks, Madam Jefferson. Now, my question goes to this because I don't understand chemistry very well. You said the hydrogen ions, excess of them was a pH of 2, and the other one, I guess, hydroxide at 12.
That's correct.
Those are toxic waste. My question is this. If I have a quart jar here that has a pH of 2, and I add another quart of distilled water to it, is it still pH 2?
The pH will change, but if you intended to discard it, it's still a hazardous waste. If
no,
you start
no,
out
you're
with,
going on to the, my second question. Is the pH changed? It's changed?
It will change.
So it's
It'll
not
be
too
diluted.
It's closer to 7 now. It's closer to neutrality. Okay. Question. Under the definition of treatment, I don't see dilution mentioned. Could you speak to that question? What... Somebody's got it. They just dilute it, and now it's not hazardous. Is that a possibility? And
we have an administrative rule that prohibits dilution as a means of evading the program.
Why wouldn't you want dilution as a treatment under this definition here? We could just speak to that. That's where I'm going.
Well, it is possible to treat a corrosive waste to make it less hazardous, but if you're doing it, you know, strictly to evade the program, you know, it would be a prohibited activity. We could grant you a license to treat your corrosive hazardous waste, and the treatment mechanism may be neutralization, you know, mixing an acid and a caustic and coming up with a neutral pH.
Okay, now I've heard you say a bunch of things there, but I'm still not sure why it wouldn't be desirable. Why wouldn't it be desirable to have dilution as under the definition of treatment? And you told me about these other things and so forth.
Well, we call it neutralization. Yeah, you may call it dilution, but yeah, we would recognize neutralizing a corrosive waste as a means of treating.
And so you would call, what one would call dilution, in other words, I would think neutralization would be creating this toxic waste that's acidic and toxic waste that's, you know, highly caustic, and mix them together and now it's pH 7 and it's not toxic.
Right.
But you, I would think you'd want to have dilution under there, and under treatment. Can we amend it? What would be the problem if our committee was concerned about that and added that right now?
I don't think it would add anything.
Wouldn't add anything? Would it harm anything?
No, but now that's a form of neutralization. You know, adding water to an acid is a form of neutralization. It's already...
I never heard a chemist say that. Neutralized by adding distilled water. You think so, huh? In the statutes it says that, huh?
Well, it doesn't say that in the statute, but that would be a form of treatment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
On the other hand, let me give you an example of... You could have acetone, which is water-soluble. Now, you can dilute acetone with water, but it's still a potential explosive hazard.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would not want to authorize, you know, dilution of acetone to evade the rules, because you have, mm-hmm, you know, you have not eliminated the hazard. So you wouldn't want to say, you know, you can treat acetone by diluting it.
Would we do anything for the public if we
add
dilution as a treatment? I think we would myself, but I'm sure Tom would probably jump off the stool if whoever passed. Because I think a lot of polluters are diluting. No, isn't that probably the, if the truth were known, that that's what most happens to a lot of waste, it's just diluted?
And I would say no.
You don't think so, huh?
No.
Okay.
Representative Trainer.
I'd like to go back to a statement you made a moment ago, and if I understood you correctly, that most of this is presently controlled through EPA in some manner. Is that most of the issues we're talking about? Is that correct?
There are two programs. That's correct. EPA has a program very similar to through the state program.
Okay. I guess my question then is, perhaps other than building a little bigger empire for DEQ, why do we need to assume this responsibility at all?
We did an analysis some time back. Of the advantages of the state doing the program or EPA doing the program. And if you'll allow me to refer to that previous document, we prepared this for the 81 legislative session when we had Senate Bill 146 up for consideration. And some of the points that we made at that time are still valid. Under an EPA program, the thrust for determining the program priorities would be in Washington, D.C. Their rules and their statutes are developed in Washington, D.C. And then they're passed down through Seattle, which is the regional office of EPA, down to an office in Portland, which is called the Oregon Operations Office. So anytime the Oregon public would like to influence that process, you're talking about lobbying people who are back in Washington, D.C. On the other hand, if you have an Oregon program, that program is developed through a combination of the Oregon Legislature, the Environmental Quality Commission, and the director, people that are all here in the state of Oregon. And the public has an opportunity to comment at any one of those levels, the legislative and the administrative. In terms of the implementation of the program, you could expect that if EPA were running it, it would probably be administered out of Portland. They would probably not further decentralize than the Portland area, and they would be sending their field inspectors out from Portland. Under a state program, the department currently has 8 field offices, plus the headquarters office in Portland. And so the public and the regulated community has an opportunity to have people closer to them to receive technical assistance from, and on the other hand, to receive inspections from.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
A couple of quick, are you finished, Representative?
No, I had one that kind of...
I yield.
Okay, Representative Trahan.
Your first point, I think, of legislative input, local, if we want to call statewide being local, legislative input versus Washington, D.C., yet didn't you tell me that whatever we adopt with this, we have to comply with the... at least the minimums that DEQ sets up. Is that not correct also?
There is a base that we would have to comply with, that EPA establishes. And states have the opportunity to be more restrictive than that if there are
but
conditions.
But not less restrictive.
But not less restrictive.
That's are correct. They? Is that base the same as their laws and rules? In other words, they say what they're presently doing is the base, or do they are they more restrictive than what they might allow us to set up as a base?
No, their base would be the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act in terms of statutes, and then the administrative rules that EPA has adopted under the RCRA Act.
And that would be the same base that they would expect us to comply with?
That's correct. That's what they're comparing our statutes and rules against.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if you could give me some examples of air transport of toxic waste or waste or whatever, dangerous waste, and also why water transport can't just very simply be handled under water quality.
To our knowledge, there is no air transport of hazardous waste at this time. On the other hand, there are airlines that specialize in moving freight, and so it's conceivable that any of these hazardous commodities, such as, say, a PCB transformer or capacitor or liquid PCB fluids to be placed in a transformer, that's conceivably a commodity that could be moved by air, so that one could assume that the waste could also be moved by air if you want to. Bulky materials like, say, acids and caustics, which are used in very large volumes, it would be impractical to move by air. but some of the very persistent and toxic materials, pesticides, products maybe being the most common, very toxic in very small concentrations, you know, in gram concentrations. And it's conceivable those could be moved by air. We don't see a lot of it, but you know, EPA and we feel the potential is there, and that if the waste is moved by those two modes, air and water, that you know, they should comply with the same restrictions that motor carriers and rail carriers have to comply with.
Madam Chair, the
Representative Anderson.
Well, to follow up on that, seemed to me that, you know, sounds strange coming from me, we just might ban any air transport of hazards. The other part of the question was, why can't all these things just simply go under our existing water quality statutes? You just say you put anything in the water, you're illegal.
Well, but the hazardous waste program goes beyond just the end result. There are administrative requirements that relate to the actual movement of the materials. So there's a requirement that there be a manifest, a shipping paper that accompany the movement of the material, and that that shipping paper be originated by the company who generated the waste, and that they transfer control to a transporter, and that that transporter haul it only to the place designated by the generator for the final point of resting, either a disposal site or a treatment site. Those manifesting requirements are unique to the hazardous waste program at this time. Were you to give this authority to water quality, you'd also have to give them authority for the manifest program for that particular, you know, aspect. So the hazardous waste program, because of the concerns either for the handling characteristics of materials or the persistence characteristics of materials, has gone beyond the normal environmental program where you tend to look just at the end of the pipe treatment. And it also covers this aspect of movement. I think hazardous waste, you know, most of it moves either by motor carrier or rail, where in water quality, you tend to collect it through a sewer system, either in an industrial plant or in a community. It all comes to a common point where the treatment is provided, and then it's released into the environment. In hazardous waste, more often than not, the movement occurs over a public right-of-way from the point of generation to the point of disposal. And so there's this added requirement to track it while it's moving on the public right-of-way, so that it doesn't get lost, doesn't get misplaced, doesn't get promiscuously dumped. And that kind of authority does not exist in our water quality program at this time, to track it from the point where it was generated to where it's actually treated or disposed. And they're very often not the same location. Whereas in air and water, the generation and the control tends to be at the same site. Air quality, you generate a gas, and the emission control device is right there at the plant site.
Any further questions?
On the bill as a whole?
On the bill as a whole. We have someone else that's going to testify, but of these two.
Well, I have a question then, Madam Chairman.
Representative Van Leer.
Page 2, Section 3, line 36 and 37. In fact, I have lots of questions, but a real specific one. What would be the cost to the Department of investigating any, which I assume means every, complaint made to it by any person? What is the cost? What is the capabilities? What is the staffing that would be required to do that in this day and age?
Well, we're doing it now for generators and storers, treaters, and disposers. Again, we have a situation here in Oregon, and most states are similar, in that most industrial companies and private citizens want to manage their waste correctly. And so generally, complaint investigations relate to the promiscuous type or the indiscriminate type of activity. And in Oregon, we don't see a lot of that. And so, you know, on an annual basis, say 1982, we probably did not receive nor investigate more than maybe 20 or so complaints of mismanagement of hazardous waste. Our normal activity is scheduled inspections.
Representative Van Leeuwen?
No, I was just asking him if those were all in Albany.
No. Principally in Portland, because that's where the bulk of the hazardous waste is generated.
Madam Chairperson?
Representative Priestley.
That same line is kind of educating, and I know it's existing practice, but what kind of safeguards are there for the owner of the property, you know, his rights of your sort of your police power coming upon his property and looking at it? Does he have any protections about that?
In the existing statute that no amendments are being proposed for, there is provision that we can make inspections to determine compliance. And the company has to allow reasonable access or access at reasonable time. So, I mean, he still does have rights. We have to respect his rights. But on the other hand, the legislature in the past has given us authority to make sure that the program requirements are being complied with.
And if you were to see some other illegal, say something entirely unrelated to your pollution rights, your pollution authorities, control authorities, you saw other illegal activities, you wouldn't, you're not obliged, and you wouldn't then divulge those things, or what would happen in that?
For example, if we saw, say, worker safety violations?
Or, say, pinball machines. I don't know. I'm just wondering if there's...
At most, what we would do is refer it to the appropriate agency if we knew what the appropriate agency was.
But you wouldn't just say that that's not your business and...
I think as a good state employee, I should refer it on to the other agency that may have authority in that area.
I see. Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions from either Richard?
Madam Chair, that statement really bothers me on illegal searches.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, that statement really bothers me. That is, I'm not a lawyer, but that sounds like illegal search and seizure to me when you're going in looking for something and find another violation and report it. I'm really touchy on that one.
Well, we're taking no action. On the other hand, I think there is a principle of something to do with what's ever in plain view is not an illegal search or seizure. So as we're walking through a plant making an air inspection or a water inspection, if we would observe what we would believe to be a worker safety violation and pass that information on to OSHA, I don't believe we've violated any state law.
Madam Chair, if I might respond somewhat to that, that the emphasis for our department staff in a site visit, either be it on the basis of a complaint we've received or just part of our annual monitoring inspection program, is to enforce or to administer those statutes and authorities which we have delegated authority over, either by action of the state legislature or another source of authority. That's our primary purpose for being on the property. That's our primary purpose for doing whatever we have to do, be it testing or report writing or whatnot. When it gets into the question of observing some type other activity unrelated to any authority that the department has and reporting that on, and you get into a wide variety of constitutional issues, which I think, you know, ultimately serve either in a judicial setting or an administrative setting to dictate to what extent a department employee or a state employee has the right or the legal authority to report on or to take any type of action, etc. And I suppose that more than anything in our rules or regulations would determine what involvement a state employee would have for any state agency.
Yeah, it really does not belong in this discussion since it is not part of this bill either. Any other questions from either of these two gentlemen, Stan or Rich? Thank you very much. Tom Donica from Association of Oregon Industries.
Good
Got the chair nice and warm for you, Tom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom Donica for Associated Oregon Industries. You took the bills in the order of 2238 first and 2237. Let me make this singular comment about 2238. That is our position that the bill with the deletions as suggested by DEQ is a perfectly fine piece of legislation. It's nice to be able to appear before legislative committee and say we agree with it. It does exactly what it purports to do. It gives the agency only that authority which is required by EPA for the state of Oregon to continue its program to achieve full compliance and full operational ability under the program, under the Federal Resource Conservation Recovery Act, which is required. I think the testimony by the agency is factual. We would support the legislation. Obviously, if the agency is being required by EPA to perhaps make some more amendments to the existing act, then it should be held. But we would be perfectly willing to suggest to you that it be passed out today, other than their request that you hold it for a short period of time. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair. Tom?